administration's 2021 Afghanistan withdrawal. The CIA struck a deal to evacuate and resettle over 85,000 Afghans, including members of its elite Zero Units paramilitary force, with little to no vetting.
John Solomon at Just the News just published an article that the Afghan assassin who shot the two National Guard members was brought over as part of a secret deal negotiated between the CIA under Joe Biden and the Afghan special forces who had been working with the CIA on the ground as part of the counterinsurgency against the Taliban. So this means not only was the Afghan refugee who did this working with the CIA on the ground, but in fact the whole reason he is here is because of a negotiated agreement between the CIA and those Afghan militia and special forces folks who were assisting the CIA. And this is not an unusual thing. In fact, it's so common that I think its impact has to be assessed and frankly declassified as to whether or not the CIA has reached such agreements, for example, with fighters in Somalia, whether the CIA has reached such agreements for resettlement and refugee status in Iraq, in Haiti, in you name it, you name your combat zone.
Standard security screenings were deliberately bypassed for these CIA-trained fighters, many of whom suffered severe PTSD and harbored resentment over the debacle of the U.S. abandonment of Kabul on Biden's watch.
Who are these people? And as I said, 75% of them are not green card holders, they're not citizens, they're not SIV holders, they're not even applicants for SIV. And this notion that they've been vetted as we would normally vet, I mean, how can we vet people? Are you going to call the Taliban government and say, you know, is this information about this criminal record accurate? Of course we can't. Normally we would be able to contact the government. Of course we didn't have an embassy because we had evacuated it. So we didn't go through the normal screening to, Director Abizade, your answer earlier, we didn't go through the normal screening process that you would for someone applying for a visa. You couldn't because we didn't have the visa officials in the foreign office there to do it. So
Lakhanwal was resettled in Bellingham, Washington in late 2021 under the U.S. government's Operation Allies Welcome Program. He arrived with his wife and five young sons on humanitarian parole, was initially hosted for 2 months by local private sponsors Stanley and Valerie Creighton, who raised money for the family via a now-deleted GoFundMe, and received 90-day resettlement assistance from World Relief and longer-term case management from the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants. Over 76,000 Afghan individuals arrived via humanitarian parole, with an additional 114,000 resettled through the follow-up on Operating Enduring Welcome from 2022 to 2025, for a combined total of nearly 190,000 Afghans nationwide. According to declassified reports, former officials in on-the-ground journalism, approximately 10,000 paramilitary Zero Units members who were directly created, funded, trained, equipped, and often directed by the CIA, plus thousands of their family members, were evacuated and resettled in the United States by late 2021. The damning mockery has reached its zenith. An administration that imported battle-hardened foreign fighters while lecturing U.S. soldiers about extremism and sedition has turned national security into a cruel joke.
The Department of Justice on Tuesday charged an Afghan national with conspiring to carry out a terror attack on Election Day. In a statement, Attorney General Merrick Garland says, quote, the Justice Department foiled the defendant's plot to acquire semi-automatic weapons and commit a violent attack in the name of ISIS.
The day after taking office, the newly confirmed Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, Colin Kyle, wrote to the members of this committee essentially stating that President Biden was smarter than Congress, was confident he had all the angles covered, and believed it was not in the national interest to provide Congress with the assurances required in Section 1215.
The same government that left billions in weapons to the Taliban also, without a doubt, delivered trained killers to American soil. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Check. challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and it reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
Into the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Third hour of the show. We got a lot more to discuss, a lot more to dive into. As many of you guys know, we were discussing at the open of the program in regard to that Brown University shooter. Now, according to officials, he is also the man behind the MIT professor, that scientist, that nuclear scientist being murdered. And so we're learning more and more about this individual. Now, again, we haven't seen any surveillance footage from inside Brown University still. We play the clips for you, Brown University president being very dismissive about it, saying that the lack of security footage, by lack, it's playing nice. There's absolutely nothing that they've released. They don't really see it as like a significant issue. Even though this is a foreign-born individual, and according to the Patriot Act, if you're not a U.S. citizen to come in and out of this country, we would have to take your biometrics. So this person's biometrics would have been obtained and stored by the federal government if they had that footage, clear footage. Maybe they could have ran his biometrics through the federal database, found out who he was, and it maybe would have had them arrest him a little bit faster rather than days. Gennison wasn't arrested. He actually, the coward he was, blew his brains out. It's according to reports. Again, suicide. Convenient, isn't it? But now the DHS secretary is coming out and she's also detailing, and she actually was very quick on this one. According to her, that this individual entered the United States through our diversity lottery immigrant visa program. Doesn't really feel like a lottery though. And then he was granted a green card apparently from all of this. Now this is something that President Trump in his first term was fighting and pushing back against, obviously, after there was an ISIS terrorist in the New York truck ramming incident that took place, that also ended up getting in from the DV-1 program. He murdered 8 people. Now, again, she is advising our U.S. Immigration Services to pause DV-1 program to ensure that no more Americans are harmed by this, obviously, disastrous program. Joining me to discuss all of this, plus more, is Drew Hernandez. He's the host of the Drew Hernandez Live Show. He's an investigative reporter, commentator as well. You can find him on X, Drew H. Live. Drew, I want to thank you for being here. This is a lot to dive into, obviously. And I'm not really buying, and we could go over this in just a bit, the narrative that they're putting out there, the local police are putting out there. But first, I want to get your take on this. You know, the DHS secretary jumped on this really, really quickly, saying that this individual got into our country through that lottery immigration program, which is not a lottery at all, considering the type of scumbags that's brought into the United States. But now she's putting a pause on that, which I'm sure the left will push back on. Your reaction to just what DHS Secretary Kristi Noem has done thus far after learning this news?
Yeah, well, good morning. Thanks for having me, Brianna. I just think the entire fiasco, I think MAGA's kind of split on it, mm-hmm. as they're split on a lot of things. Immediately, you had a lot of people coming out on X and saying, well, obviously, this is a fiasco. The DEI police chief, the guy can't even speak English. He's all over the place. He can't get his story straight. Even last night, I was listening to the press conference when they were announcing that they caught him. They got him. And it's like always, it ends in a suicide. So there could be no interrogation, no real questioning going on. How convenient. But it was interesting because in the press conference last night, not sure if you listened to it, but this DEI police chief, whoever this guy is that can't even speak English, was attempting to communicate that this was the person of interest from the very beginning. It was released and it led to the ultimate capture and the way things ended last night. But I found that to be very contradicting because they had another person of interest and it was the wrong person. And even Kash Patel came out, as always, and tries to take credit for everything. It's just interesting how some of these MAGA cheerleaders on X don't know what to do. They're all over the place. Anytime something appears to be good happening, Kash Patel will run in if the FBI is involved, take credit for it. But then it's a massive mistake. It's the wrong guy. And then it just becomes a fiasco or a circus. But then the guy gets, you know, caught and it's a suicide. And then it's credit to the good work of the FBI and it's credit to the good work of the feds that actually stepped in and got down to the bottom of it, because the DEI, the university leadership, was obviously engaging in some kind. This is my opinion. It appears to be some kind of cover up. So the trust is all over the place. I think the trust has been shot for a very long time, and just contradiction after contradiction. Inconsistencies really doesn't help build any trust between the American people and any law enforcement or institution. And that just seems to keep happening. And it's a 48-year-old Howard University student. The guy apparently attended Howard University in the early 2000s and just somehow made a comeback. But here's what's also interesting, Brianna, is we did have Israeli media that was attempting to claim that the shooter of the MIT professor was the same shooter or directly connected. And we're hearing that from the feds as well, that that is a possible connection, and even local law enforcement, that it's the same shooter, MIT, Brown University. But Israeli media was attempting to say that it was an Iranian hit. These were Israeli officials. And so, you know, I pay attention to the reaction of things as well. And I've learned this from Alex Jones too, is, you know, you just kind of see things unfold and pay attention to the reaction of governments, world leaders, officials, and see if they can get their story straight. Are there any contradictions? Are there any inconsistencies? Is there any big push for some kind of crackdown or policy that goes against the free rights of human beings or Americans? And it's just interesting how there always seems to be some kind of injection by Israel or the Zionist that this is Iran yet again, just like they did after Butler, Pennsylvania and J-13. So, you know, it's just those types of things that cause you to sit back and ask questions, but you're not allowed to do that because, you know, that's just bad these days.
Yeah. And Drew, I remember seeing the report too, that Israel was actually investigating whether Iran played a role in this or not. That popped up early this morning. And I was just kind of like, well, why would Israel be leading an investigation? It just seemed really strange. Again, I want to kind of learn more about the professor and all of this, the MIT professor. And there was like a pro-Palestinian angle to this at the very beginning phases of the investigation, something that the college was quickly scrubbing from their website. You know, we reached out for comment actually to understand why they were scrubbing individuals who were named, but according to the school, had no affiliation at all with the murder that took place. And they didn't give us really a detailed response in regards to that. They kind of danced around the issue. But right. You also mentioned something that I think is really important. You know, at the beginning of the presser, we sat there and watched all these federal agents and local PD, actually the one federal agency and local PD, all give themselves pats on the back. They always do this nowadays. They say, oh, we did an incredible job, like they did for the J6 pipe bomber too. We did an incredible job at investigating this. But the reality is, from my understanding, is the MIT professor was killed after the Brown University shooting. And maybe if Brown had the surveillance on its campus that would have captured the images, they would have somehow caught this person before they went out there and killed another person. So I don't know why they're saying that after days of investigating this, that this is somehow a great investigation. I mean, there were so many missteps. In fact, local PD blaming the FBI for that first person that was captured, that wasn't a suspect at all. And then we saw President Trump tweeting or Truth Social posts saying that they captured the suspect. He was under arrest. And then quickly had to revise that. That sounded like to me, yet again, that the FBI director probably told him that this person was captured, even though that wasn't truthful. And the only reason why I'm assuming it's the FBI director is because, well, he's done this time and time again. He was very excited to announce the capture of two individuals and a minor who were apparently plotting a ISIS-inspired terror attack. Just a couple of weeks ago, he jumped the gun on that one before four of the other suspects were even arrested and before the criminal complaint was even filed. He posted about that because he was under obviously attack for a very controversial move to use the jet for his personal leisure. So it kind of feel like he was deflecting there. He's done this multiple times. So even the Charlie Kirk assassination, he said that there was a suspect that was arrested that wasn't actually a suspect at all. So he jumps the gun on a lot of this. And so, you know, you just highlighted it, and I guess I could kind of let you kind of carry it away from here, though. But you highlighted how, again, he jumped on board with this and took it as if this was one of their accomplishments for the agency to capture this individual. But again, you know, their spokesperson, Ben Williamson, who's a great individual, and nothing against him, but he, the day before, put out a statement saying that the FBI is not leading in this investigation, that they're just kind of playing an assistant role in all of this. But now all of a sudden they're claiming victory here as if they really were the ones to help out majorly in all of this. I mean, what's your thoughts about how the FBI's handled all of these scandals over these last few weeks?
I think maybe Kash Patel should stop going on Boss Girl podcast with his girlfriend.
Yeah. One would say.
Maybe he should stop wasting his time on a bunch of BS, giggling and smiling on these stupid podcasts that are meaningless. Nobody cares, dude. Nobody cares. Literally nobody cares out here about your relationship. You know, good for you. No hate against them.
Yeah.
But the American people did not vote for a new FBI director, you know, via the president making appointments, right? The American people did not vote for, you know, a new administration that had a new FBI director that was busy going on Boss Girl podcasts, giggling with his girlfriend with a Valley Girl accent like he's from California or something.
Yeah.
I'm from California, so I can identify this immediately. Maybe he should stop wasting his time. Maybe. I don't think it's a good sign Dan Bongino's leaving the FBI as well.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I know you've been attempting, just like everybody else, to get some info as to, you know, pinning down the reasons exactly why. Could be some, you know, potential health issues, family issues, wanting to get back to family, or maybe he sees how compromised everything is. I mean, obviously, you know, Dan Bongino as well had some major blowouts attempting to tell the world that Epstein killed himself. Trust me, bro. I've seen the tape that was left behind for you to see. Yeah. I just think that's not really a good sign. I think if Bongino's tapping out, you got to ask yourself why. What the hell is going on at that FBI? You know, they could all try and show face and be cordial, which is fine, and try to make it look like it's all being held together when it's obviously not. The American people are not stupid. And that's where this administration is making a major misstep. The gaslighting, treating people like they're stupid, treating people like they're not seeing what they're seeing, they're not hearing what they're hearing, these massive mistakes. And it's like we're returning back to the Bush era of the GOP Republican politics, you know, early 2000s, decades before. And this administration has engaged in that, and it's pissing people off. It's really pissing people off, especially a lot of people that have been OG MAGA from the beginning, because a lot of people were expecting a lot more accountability and a better performance. But back to Kash Patel, you know, Dan Bongino leaving the FBI, I just wonder, like, are we in a golden age or are we not? Like, wouldn't it be better for Dan Bongino to remain in the FBI, to continue to crack down on the deep state and go after the Adam Schiffs and the Hillary Clintons and all of these deep state villainous satanic operatives of the world? I would say I would rather have Dan Bongino in a capacity like that as well. I think that him leaving the FBI is kind of telling, to be completely honest with you. But back to Kash Patel again, I think he should stop wasting his time. Stop wasting my time, Kash. Stop wasting my money. Okay, you work for me. Kash Patel works for me. He works for you. He works for the American people. Don't ever forget that. I don't care who you are and how high you think you are on your high horse. You work for me. You work for the American people. And the moment you turn on that, and the moment you start to pull the mask off and people start to see that you think it's the opposite, the moment we begin to realize very quickly just exactly who you really are. And I think a lot of people, the American people, especially in MAGA, are starting to see that. And these mistakes, these are, you know, are these intentional mistakes? Is he incompetent? Is this being done on purpose? I mean, the Charlie Kirk thing is just a clear example of that, right? I mean, and see, but that's the thing, Brianna, is like we get gaslit. I know you probably get a lot of this too, is like, okay, well, you're allowed to believe Tyler Robinson is the one that murdered Charlie Kirk, the only one. You can't look outside of anything. You can't look outside of that nowhere else. It's just him. That's what you can believe. That's what you can declare. He is guilty. There's no innocence. But if you go outside of that, there's something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. You go outside of that, you're a conspiracy theorist. You go outside of that, you're a schizophrenic. You go outside of that, well, you're not rational. But it's interesting because when you get to the Howard University situation, oh, now all of a sudden we're allowed to not believe the official narrative. Why? Because of inconsistencies, whether it's incompetence or whether it's intentional. Obviously, something is wrong here. So it's just interesting how there's this back and forth. There's this back and forth where you have to believe the official narrative on one thing, But when it comes to the other situation, okay, we can ask some questions. And that's what's pissing people too off, because you have a lot of MAGA cheerleaders out here all over social media. I don't know what their interest is. Maybe they're afraid of losing access to the White House or Mar-a-Lago, which is pathetic, that are unwilling to be consistent on these things. And the American people at home, they're just kind of sitting back watching this, and they're just shaking their heads and saying, I didn't vote for this. I didn't vote for this at all. I voted for a serious crackdown and serious accountability into the future. And they've had about a year, and I don't think we're anywhere near where we need to be.
Yeah, and Drew, just to kind of, you know, piggyback on what you just said, the attacks that are taking place, though. Okay, so let's talk about like how if you don't go with the narrative, the pro-Trump narrative right now, you get attacked. I mean, I will put out stories that I know are factually true because they're heavily sourced with those who are close to the sources itself. And then I get attacked on social media quite often. Kat Turd obviously publicly coming after me when he didn't like one of my reports, which is just funny given the fact that his Twitter name is Kat Turd, I know. But these people are very aggressive at going after you if you just dispute anything. You know, I also called in the other day to Harrison Smith's show here on InfoWars, and I've got a lot of connections with the FBI and those closely sourced with Dan Bongino. And I gave a report, and their unofficial spokeswoman, Julie Kelly, actually came after us yesterday for my report, which clearly cites personal issues, right? Because he wasn't supposed to leave the agency this quickly. Obviously, this is very abrupt. And so one's wondering, well, why? And I've been very respectful and just critical of the FBI as a whole. So we give a whole update as to what my sources are telling me. Again, people very close to the situation, as close as one could possibly get. And I believe she called me and Harrison Smith bottom dwellers on X. Now, I joked and won't directly respond to her because she's just a frustrated. Well, I mean, I did. I called her first name and last name out. But I just think these are the kind of people who will go after you and target you if you speak out. If you go against the narrative and they don't like it, maybe you piss off some people at these agencies, they will go and pounce on you so quickly.
Brianna, was this a spokesperson for the FBI or just some MAGA cheerleader on
social media? Julie Kelly is supposed to be a journalist. She is close friends. Here's the comment here. She is close friends with Dan, and I know just that. And I've actually had her on my show before. She has my number. If she had a problem with anything that was said during this discussion, she's got my number. She could call. She has chosen not to do so. She also wasn't very happy with me back in the day when she put out a report saying that the raid at Mar-a-Lago was going to be like an execution almost for President Trump. I think I'm probably misquoting her there, but it was very dramatically written, her article on it. And I just publicly, without even going after her, posted the documents to prove that this wasn't exactly what was going on behind the scenes, because I had sources within law enforcement handed the document over to me so we could see it raw and see that it wasn't the case. It's also cited several times in court documents that they had communicated with Secret Service as well, between Secret Service and the FBI. They had communicated prior to the raid at Mar-a-Lago. So again, I didn't back that raid, obviously. That was an awful thing that happened in the first place, and he should be sued, or he should sue them and get all the money that he can from it. But it was just being misrepresented. Long story short, we had drinks planned and she canceled and decided to just go bash us online publicly rather than just have a face-to-face conversation. So this is just someone who, again, who will go after you publicly if she has a problem with you. I prefer to do things privately, though. People have my number. You could reach out and talk to people. But these are people, Drew, who... Just again, it's not just Julie, it's other people out there. If you question the narrative, they pounce on you. The left doesn't do this though, Drew, right? If you put out a story and you're a member of the left, they won't pounce on you. They just let it all fly. They don't turn on each other. Whether they do it behind the scenes or not, that's fine. But publicly, they don't go after you. Why do you think that, though, as conservatives, as those who supported the president originally, whenever we offer an ounce of criticism, we're immediately pounced on?
I think it's pretty obvious. Within MAGA, within the right wing, the past 10 years, and Trump has been really used to this because we've been on this ride with him for nearly a decade now, where he's constantly attacked, he's constantly slandered, anything connected to him, whether it's his business or his administration or his family, he's constantly under fire, right? Yeah. And we've always been there to support the president because every time... There's this type of assault, right? Russiagate, the Ukraine phone call, the impeachment hoaxes, all of that. The indictments, the witch hunts, the lawfare, all of it. MAGA has always stood by President Trump's side, as they should be when there's something like that happening, because he resembled that freedom, that voice. That's what the silent majority term meant from the very beginning, 10 years ago. He was that voice. He was that... the pinnacle of where America really wanted to go and what America really wanted to say. So when that was attacked, like Trump has always said, they're not going after me, they're going after you, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like, they got to get through me to get to you type of thing. And we saw that post January 6th, hunting down the J6ers. So it's been this way for nearly a decade. And I think Trump has been so used to, and the administration or anybody connected to him, and even MAGA is so used to this, is just constantly defending Trump when he obviously needs it and it's appropriate. But when there's some serious issues going on and there's some legitimate criticism because we want change, not because we hate Trump or because we want to throw him, you know, overboard, but because we want to hold him accountable. It just seems like you can't do that right now. It seems like you can't do that anymore, which doesn't make sense to me because I threw the MAGA hat on in 2015 and, you know, fell in love with what Trump was saying and where he wanted to take things. And one of the things that I mainly fell in love with was how it was the era of accountability now. We're going to hold people accountable. And Trump included himself in that conversation. But now you have all these shills and you have these people at the White House and you have all these people in these press corps and you have all these, you know exactly what I'm talking about, Brianna. You have these people that are just unwilling to legitimately criticize this administration, this president, when it's necessary, because we want what we voted for. We want accountability. There's nothing wrong with that. That's American. But you get gaslit. You get called a panican. You get called a traitor. You're not truly MAGA. So I think a lot of these people are so used to, that's their default, to just be loyal to President Trump and defend him no matter what, even if it's not rational and it doesn't make sense and they're hypocritical, even if it's just a legitimate criticism. That's backfiring on them because it's creating this kind of new elitist mentality. Like that tweet right there that you guys put up, that woman that responded to you.
Yeah.
What did she say? A bottom feeder?
Yeah, she called us bottom feeders or bottom dwellers.
Yeah, you're just a peasant. You're a peasant, Brianna. Yeah. You're a peasant. Anybody asking questions, you're a peasant. Okay, we're in our high tower and you're just a bottom dweller. That's what you are for asking questions. And it's like, okay, here we are back to square one. 10 years ago, where, you know, obviously we were the bottom dwellers. We were the basket of deplorables. We were the ones, you know, that's Hillary Clinton mentality. Mm-hmm. But the mentality is the uniparty. It's just simply, we're the elites. You're the peasants. Stop asking questions and just fall in line. And that's not going to fly. It's really not going to fly. And I think this is kind of indicating the close of the MAGA era. Trump's going to be done in 3 years. And like I told Alex Jones a couple weeks ago on a show is, you know, I don't think this is necessarily about throwing Trump overboard or, you know, doing away with Trump. He's going to be in for the next 3 years. I pray he does the best he possibly can for the sake and the good of this country. But it really is time to move on. It really is. I think it's time to move on. It's time to re-strategize. It's time to mobilize because a lot of young people, you know, maybe the boomers don't understand this, because that generation is going to be up in maybe 15, 20 years max. But you and I, Brianna, by God's grace, if he gives us this time in life and Christ doesn't return, we're going to be here for like the next 50 years. Trump is not. So it really is time. And that's not disrespect. That's just being real. I'm a realist, dude. So yeah. I think that's where we're at. You know, I think instead of just wasting time, I'm not saying you're doing this. I'm just saying like collectively, as we think this thing through, instead of just constantly, you know, having to make Trump look good and make sure the administration doesn't look bad. It's like call balls and strikes. This is how it should be. But I think we really got to start thinking about what this looks like for the future for the next 20 years, 50 years.
We really do. Drew Hernandez, thank you for joining me today. Of course, we appreciate you jumping on the show. Give me a follow on X. Drew H. Live right now. Head over there and do just that. All right, guys. Mel K's up next. Don't go anywhere. Thanks to Drew for joining me. Mel's going to dive into the AI issues. There's a lot more to discuss in just a bit.
Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot do this without you. You're the reason we're here. You're our sponsor. You are what keeps us on air. And we are launching today through the 23rd of December, the final days of Christmas sale at thealexshowstore.com. 60% off on our best-selling ultramethylene blue, Irish sea moss gummies, and Shilajit gummies, and more. If you haven't tried our ultramethylene blue that is the strongest, best out there that we found, bar none, you're crazy. What it does for your mitochondria, your energy, your stamina, with no letdown, is insane. It's so good for you. Just research the studies. We have medical grade. We have the best. And you've seen all our guests and others that come in here, and they're just blown away by it, including those who are already taking Methylene Blue. They're like, wow, this is way stronger, way better. It's amazing. I'm challenging all of you. I'm challenging everybody to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds. We are in the red. I met with accountants this morning. Not too bad, but we're there. And we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and get 50% off on all future orders in perpetuity until you decide to cancel. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition, over 700 designs at thealexjonesstore.com. So my challenge to all of you is this. Get a bottle of ultramethylene blue for 60% off right now, and then you're going to be blown away and reorder it. You've heard all the people call in with their testimonials. This is the real deal. The best salesmen sell the best products. I promote and sell freedom. I promote and sell stopping the globalist. You know my information is the most accurate out there. Why on earth would you think that I would tell you this will change your life? The Shilajit, the Irish Sea Moss, the bovine colostrum, Ultimate Life Force, Spike Protein, Cardiovascular Detox. All these are kick-butt products. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Please do your Christmas shopping there. We need your support. It's a win-win for everybody. You keep this operations, the true thorn on the side of the globals on the air. And separately, the classic Nitric Boost. Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, I didn't know she knew about it. She bought it. So this is the best formula for your heart and for spike protein and for everything else. And men notice it in the morning when they wake up. It is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com exclusively. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost. All of you need these products. Take action now.
Whoa, dude, is that Methylene Blue? This house really knows me.
Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're jumping on with us, of course, for the second part of the second hour. All right, we've covered a lot thus far. We still have you guys all on hold on the phone line, so make sure you stay put because we'll get back to calls in just a bit. But I wanted to talk about what we were dipping in and out of yesterday. As many of you guys saw, Fannie Willis made her grand appearance yesterday in front of one of the Georgia Senate committees. Now, she had a lot of explaining to do. As many of you guys know, she's been accused of a lot of corruption between her boyfriend, and a lot of other things. She led a political persecution. Thankfully, she failed. But just from, okay, let's get a little girly here. That attire, I would say she probably stole that from a Christmas tree. That looks like the skirt of a Christmas tree. It's not exactly a fashion statement, but she is no fashionista, as I would say. Also, she was sporting a, in case you guys care at home, a nearly $11,000 Louis Vuitton bag. I wonder how she could afford all of that. That's quite impressive. That's quite impressive as a county district attorney. Now, folks, she was grilled on some really, really key points yesterday, specifically, obviously, her relationship with Nathan Wade, which was her We don't know if they're still together or what the status is, but Nathan Wade was the individual who she appointed to be the special prosecutor in that RICO case that failed miserably, and thankfully it did. She was asked this particular question in clip 16 about billing, because apparently she allowed Nathan Wade to bill for a massive amount of hours per week. And in case you're wondering who pays that bill, by the way, it's taxpayers. Take a listen.
I don't review those documents, so you're asking me to look at documents that I haven't for the first time. What I can tell you is that I allowed Mr. Wade to bill 160 hours a week, and then Mr. Wade would be the first one in the office making sure that my staff arrived. He corrected their behavior. They thought that 8:30 meant 8:30. He taught them that 8:30 means 7:45.
So he did his job and was able to bill 160 hours per week. That is insane. Insane. Joining me to discuss is one of the great senators from the beautiful state of Georgia. Colton Moore is with us today. He's also running right now to fill Marjorie Taylor Greene's congressional seat, the 14th congressional district in Georgia. And he joins us now to discuss because he had the best seat in the House yesterday, Senator Moore. You were right behind Fannie Willis throughout it. You probably had her shook. She obviously knows who you are. You're one of the very few people that are trying to pull for accountability in the state of Georgia. So I'm sure she was loving it, of course. But she seemed very uncomfortable, although she had poor posture throughout the entire committee hearing itself during her testimony. We were all wondering the control room, even the guys, like, lady, sit up, be respectful. The entire testimony, she was just disrespectful to your colleagues. What did you take away from all of this?
Well, I tell you what, I mean, from the time she walked in and she had, I mean, we've always said she's the Atlanta Mafia, and she definitely came off as that Atlanta mob boss walking into the committee hearing. When she sat down and she looked behind her and she saw me, she had an absolute freak out. I mean, the woman was stunned. She sized me up and down, and she called over her personal bodyguard to come over and sit right next to me. And I said, that's no problem, Miss Willis, it'll be no problem. He can sit right here. Welcome, sir. She was very shook up by my presence there. But you got to remember, I mean, for 2 years, I've been calling for an investigation into defund Fannie Willis. I mean, I was even kicked out of the Rhino Republican caucus in the Senate for putting so much pressure on them for them to do their job and investigate Fannie. This is the first time she's finally appeared before the state Senate, and we learned some pretty fantastic things. I mean, stuff we had already assumed, but we finally got some proof on. You know, Fannie always claims that she's the queen of RICO, but in reality, she's running a RICO market herself, because the same day that she releases letters to the governor and the attorney general calling for them to retain all of their information was the same time that Jack Smith is appointed. It's the same time that people in high level places of the DOJ are leaving the DOJ and working for Alvin Bragg. I mean, Nathan Wade, another thing, was spending tens of thousands of dollars to coordinate with the January 6th committee, and Fannie Willis had no idea that that money was being spent or that's what he was doing. On the same day that all of this starts with this whole conspiracy around Alvin Bragg and Jack Smith, Nathan Wade is on the phone with the White House for 8 hours. 8 hours. And Fannie doesn't understand why. She doesn't know. And anytime she was pressed on any of this, all of a sudden her response was, the only reason why you're asking that question is because I'm a Black woman. Well, that might work from wherever she comes from, but here in Georgia, we operate a little differently in race relations, all right? We're all one blood, we're all Georgians, and that whole race-baiting argument doesn't work like she may think it does. I mean, obviously, Georgians aren't taking that very seriously. And the other thing is, which is mind-boggling to me, Fannie Willis, in this account that we've just discovered yesterday, that nobody knows how it was funded or why it was used to spend money out of, to hire Jeff DeSantis, not to be confused with Governor DeSantis, but this Jeff DeSantis guy has worked for Kamala Harris, worked for Joe Biden, worked for Charlie Bailey in Georgia, and was working for her in public relations. And as soon as she drops the letters and starts this indictment against President Trump and the 18 others, they start tracking her earned media earnings. And she has earned $600 million in media, that's how much money she would have to spend if she wanted to gain that much coverage just since this case started. That's absolutely astronomical to use taxpayer money in such a corrupt way, try to take the way of the liberties, and then the cherry on top for her, she was just tracking and trying to get more and more media attention for her own personal gain.
Okay, let's break that down a little bit, because $600,000 is insane. Now, that's something that's being footed for... Yeah, that's being the taxpayers are covering that expense, and that's to land more media coverage. Is that correct?
Okay, yeah. So we have an account that we don't know where the money came from, but it was written out of an official Fulton County District Attorney's account that used to pay for the media research to track how much value she was actually gaining for her own name, Fonnie Willis, not Fulton County District Attorney's Office or anything that, her own name. And that earned media. This isn't actual money that she spent. This is how much value she received for promoting her own personal brand.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something? And you could feel it when you were watching her throughout all of this, that this was all about personal benefits to promote herself at this point. And she took down a lot of people who I feel so bad for, people who never even met the president, were wrapped up into that RICO case. Then there were other incredible patriots like Jeff Clark, who were also wrapped up into that case, who literally never sent the letter that they accused him of. And they sat there and they tried to tarnish his reputation and tried very aggressively to go after him. The expenses, the damages that these people have to pay for, I mean, their life savings completely wiped out just to defend themselves in this case. And this woman has zero empathy at all for these people. And I know earlier you cited that there were 8 hours were taken up on a phone call with the White House. Was that also billed to taxpayers? I know there were several hours that Nathan Wade did bill taxpayers for. So was that phone call with Nathan Wade in the White House?
All of this was taxpayer money. Now, to your point about the victims, essentially the 18 people who were indicted and had to go through, and I mean, people were having to sell properties, mortgage their houses. The state Senate has passed legislation that allows for these people to get all of their money back and attorney's fees as well. So, you know, Fonnie Willis, Fulton County, they're ultimately going to have to pay all of this money back to these individuals when that is brought into effect. I don't know if justice is served yet. In my opinion, Fonnie Willis needs to come back. Nathan Wade needs to come before this committee. Jeff DeSantis needs to come before this committee. I mean, the connections that and Jeff DeSantis has made hundreds of millions of dollars through Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. He was, in my opinion, really the plant of the White House in Fonnie's office to coordinate with the Alvin Bragg, the J6 committee and Jack Smith. And they were all running a straight RICO to try to take down President Trump and anybody else who was on his side. I mean, think about the chilling effect that it had on every other legislator's voices or even everyday Americans. People were afraid to speak out against the election because what is Fonnie Willis going to do? Is she going to say, I'm going to jail because I'm part of some RICO? I mean, think about it. Some of these people had never even made it to Fulton County and she was charging them because she said it was a RICO case. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely ridiculous. And you mentioned the Senate bill. Does that have the support of the governor in Georgia?
You know, I certainly hope so. If he wants any face at all. Yeah.
That would be good. That'd be great to hear. I also want to get to the point of a lot of us, when we were reporting on what was happening in Fulton County, believed that Fannie Willis was meeting with the White House. And there seems to be some proof of that has popped up. And I wanted to see if you guys have anything else on this, because, you know, there's logs that suggest that she did meet with the Vice President of the United States. Have we gone anywhere with this? Have we received more information? Because she's denied this in the past, but it seems like there's a lot of proof here that suggests that she actually did take meetings.
Well, I mean, does she have to be there in physical person, or does she just leave Nate Wade on the speakerphone for 8 hours, right?
Yeah.
She made trips to D.C. Tens of thousands of dollars was spent coordinating with the J6 committee. I mean, it is very clear and evident to, I think, any reasonable person that there was coordination with the White House. I mean, look at the dates. How is it coincidence that Jack Smith and the resignation from the DOJ, all of this happens literally on the same days? That's coordination.
Yeah. No, it appears to be that way. And we'd love to see more information on that. I mean, we've been talking about this for years now, and I know she continues to deny it, but it's pretty clear that this was happening on several fronts. I mean, you outlined Alvin Bragg and others as well have all been on this for quite some time right now. And it's clear that there was some type of communications, but it's unfortunate that the J6 committee just happened to hit mass delete on a lot of the key evidence that would tell us if they were speaking or if they weren't speaking. I mean, we had the chairman, Barry Loudermilk, gone just a few days ago, and we asked him these key questions, and a lot of even the footage has been released, deleted, from the J6 committee and the surveillance footage that day. So this is really frustrating, and we're constantly having to work our way behind on all of this. But, you know, there are some signs of hope here, so let's be a little optimistic. Let's turn to this story. The DOJ on Friday filed a lawsuit against Fulton County, Georgia, in an attempt to obtain those records from the 2020 election. Now, this is a bold move being made because, again, folks, all of this started with a lot of allegations that Fulton County was experiencing a lot of corruption back in 2020 when it came to their elections. There are people who I've spoken to on the ground in Fulton County who believe that a lot of these records have since disappeared, that they no longer have a lot of these ballot stubs and these signature envelopes that are being called into question here. What do you make of the DOJ's attempt to get access to all of this?
No, I think they've got every right to, and I think it's the right thing to do. I mean, go back to the phone call with Fani Willis. You can make this connection here. Mm-hmm. I mean, the phone call of the 11,000 votes, the whole key to Fani Willis's case, what people don't realize is literally sitting right next to the Secretary of State when this phone call is made, is 14,000 affidavits of fraud from citizens all across Georgia who signed with the threat of perjury, the threat that they could go to jail if they were found to be lying, that they saw election fraud. So all President Trump was asking for is go open up the first three boxes over here, investigate that fraud. I mean, Fani Willis always likes to say, oh, they're trying to overturn the election. No, it was very simple. They were trying to question the integrity of that election. And then you stop them from doing that by trying to put them in jail for the rest of their life. The DOJ, I'm super excited they're coming to Fulton County. But you got to remember, too, this election fraud, while it was big in Fulton County, it wasn't just there, right? Floyd County, which is part of my district, extreme election fraud there as well. A lot of proof of it. It's scattered all across Georgia. And I tell you what, we have got to get to single day voting and paper ballots in this country because the machines, they win. Artificial intelligence is too strong. If you want the humans to be in control, we've got to get to paper ballots.
Yeah, and that's something that we're disappointed with on a federal level is not being pushed more aggressively. We're watching as the president continues to say this. But unfortunately, right now, in both the Senate and the House, we're not really seeing much momentum on that front. And I think that's really, really important. You know, Senator Moore, I wanted to ask you as well. I know that, you know, sadly, we're losing the congressional member who I've loved dearly over the years, Marjorie Taylor Greene, stepping away from her seat right now. But you have decided to run for her seat. So give our audience some insight as to what you were looking to accomplish with this congressional run.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately fill that void. I mean, there are a few people who have put out as many Marjorie Taylor Greene signs as I have across the district. It's extremely saddening to see her resign in this way. But ultimately, Northwest Georgia is one of the most conservative places in the entire country. We can't afford to send some rhino up to D.C. that's just going to blend in with the curtains. I mean, I've been the Trump's number one fighter in the Georgia legislature. I want to make sure that he gets some congressmen up there that can fight on behalf of his agenda and leave a great legacy over the next 2 years. I mean, I would love to see, we're just talking about elections. I want to see a mandated single day election from the federal government. Why have it in November? Just put it on, you know, July 4th. We all go vote and shoot off fireworks and take the day off and vote for America. I think that would bring in some great patriotism. But ultimately, the number one issue for everyday Northwest Georgians and across the country is affordability. You know, the two most expensive places are the gas station and the grocery store. And we've got to continue to fight to stop inflation, quit sending all this money to Ukraine and elsewhere. I mean, just my home little county of 15,000 people, if it got its fair share of the money that's been sent to Ukraine, it would have nearly $15 million. I mean, when you start putting things like that into perspective, and hopefully I can articulate that in Washington, you know, we can represent Northwest Georgia well.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to this because I know you've been a fighter for quite some time now. We've been watching you for a couple of years, so we're excited that you're running for MTG's seat. And we wish you the very best, of course, for our audience. If you want to learn more about his campaign, you can head on over to ColtonMoore.com. Senator, thank you for joining us today. We greatly appreciate your time as always, so thank you.
Thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. All right, folks, we're going to continue taking your calls. I know a lot of you have been a hold for quite some time now. So let's turn back to your comments. Let's turn to Tim in Seattle. Tim, welcome back to the show. Tim in Seattle. Hold on 1 second. Tim, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Brianna. How are you? Good morning.
Good. How are you?
Doing okay. I just wanted to ask the right wing to figure it out. I mean, we're getting led astray by PSYOPs and paid politicians for narratives and whatnot, and we're just seeing it all. It's rather frustrating. So I think we should set down the PSYOPs, especially with the whole January 6th pipe bomber thing. They arrested it. They know it's a CIA agent. They know it's Capitol Police agent, but they're going to throw this black guy who obviously is innocent, and they're going to try to shove it down our throat and accept it. And if we accept that, then we have to accept every other lie that they give us from here on out. So it's either we stop accepting the lies that they give us, or we just literally throw the white flags up and ask the deep state to be polite and show us mercy. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time.
Well, thanks for calling, Tim. You know, it's crazy because here on InfoWars, obviously, we've challenged this this narrative that this is the suspect who's responsible. We've read through the criminal complaint. I tell you, there's nothing really there that I think of substance that truly pins this on this guy. And I was told when I asked, because, you know, I asked tough questions. When I asked, you know, what else do you guys have on this guy? I'm told that you're going to get more information. And so, yeah, I'm not buying it when it comes to this being the mastermind behind J6, the pipe bombing situation. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. And the fact that he is, according to his family, someone who does DoorDash also has me concerned. Because again, he could just be someone who just picked up these things because he was told to do so, paid a couple of, maybe $100 off in cash, and was like, all right, I could use the money, and did it. I mean, that's me speculating here. But again, yeah, I just don't think that we go along with this narrative because it doesn't seem to make sense. And we haven't seen videos of him walking. I'm sure we'll have that soon. But again, yeah, I would say Tim, spot on. Again, we need more information on all of this. And, you know, the old guys, before they stepped into this agency, all believed you when they thought that this was a government operation. Now, all of a sudden, it's changed. No surprise there. Thanks for calling and waiting on hold, Tim. We appreciate it. All right, let's turn to Tim in California. Tim, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Brianna. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
You know, the other day, we all had this four people arrested, and they were arrested for planning to bomb on New Year's Eve here in Southern California. Well, now, last night, actually 4 a.m. yesterday morning, 16 members of a local gang linked to the Mexican Mafia were arrested in a sweep here in San Gabriel Valley of Southern California. The gang is called Puente 13, and if you wonder where the San Gabriel Valley is, I'm sure they're from La Puente. You can look that up, and you'll see basically where it is, about 20 miles east of Los Angeles, 20 to 30 miles, depending on what part of the valley you're in there. But they served over 20 arrest warrants. They picked up 16 people, and, I mean, they got thousands of 30 fentanyl and car fentanyl pills and fentanyl powder and all this kind of stuff. And for those that don't know, the car fentanyl is a synthetic opioid that's 100 times more powerful than fentanyl. So anyways, if you see their photograph, the arrest photo of these 16 guys, it's got the same stripe over their eyes, the little stripe, you know, like in custody or arrested, the same kind of photography they did for the other four, only this time it's 16 people. A couple of them are already dead.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's all concerning. I actually didn't even see the story, so you put this on my radar, Tim. So thank you for that. Yeah, it's a lot going on, actually. It's up to 5 arrests now in that left-wing terror plot, the alleged left-wing terror plot. Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty insane, but we've got our eyes on this. I'm glad you brought that story to our attention, Tim. Thank you for that. My gosh, it just seems to get worse and worse and worse. People that have come into this country. Tim, thanks for calling. Thank you for staying on hold. We greatly appreciate your time. Let's go to Marcus. Marcus, what is on your mind?
Hello, Brianna. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I don't like this blackpilling of President Trump. I think he's doing wonderful work. And you've got to understand that there was 4 years of people in power, which broke a lot of things. And there was, before that, there was half of the government, which was arrayed against Trump in the first administration. So what you've got is continued activism against him in every form possible. And he is doing such wonderful things. I think that this is the man. I wish he was still going at 100 miles an hour like he was when he started. I think that there's a lot of lawyers in deep state that have been whispering in his ears, and saying we can't go this fast, we can't do this, can't do that. But as far as him personally, he is a wonderful president. And I can't stand people just constantly bashing him. It's like I can't even listen to Harrison anymore because I know where he's going to go. He's just, his hatred is just as clear and present, and I don't like hearing that. So I wish you guys could put a check in yourself about that.
And— All right. Well, Marcus, hear me out. Right, I give balanced coverage, so I think I covered the good and the bad. And I think it's fair to be critical. You see, here's my thing, and I'll let you answer because I'll give you like a minute on the other end to answer. But on my end, I've covered extensively all the good things he's done. We've encouraged him to continue doing great things, and we've kind of put our footing in. But this is going to be an opinion. And so I can't sit here and tout everything that he's done as good, right? Because I continue to see him supporting more foreign deeds rather than American. We continue to sit back and watch him as he is spending more time on taking meetings with foreign officials. And that's concerning. Yes, okay, he's done some great things in the economy. We outlined that. Immigration, we've outlined that. But when you talk about the people who have infiltrated into the administration, who are withholding, and I would say holding up the greatness that he could possibly be doing, he has not yet gotten rid of those people. I mean, how long do we have to wait before we start going, all right, where's the changes? You know, we're told when we ask questions in regards to the personnel changes that are being made internally over agencies like the FBI and the DOJ, we're told, oh, just we can't talk about it. But, you know, the woman who's prosecuting the J6 pipe bomber, the alleged J6 pipe bomber, is an individual who has committed, according to several people's allegations, she has committed, I would say, treasonous acts. She has brought forward pieces of evidence that she claims are evidence, which are manufactured. We saw what she did during the Proud Boys trial. We also saw what she did to General Michael Flynn when the charges were supposed to be dropped. She decided to, they say it was a mistake, put the wrong attorney ID information in there to withhold those charges from being dropped. But these people are still in key places. You got to purge them. You got to get rid of them. And I know he's going to sit there, or the people in these positions are going to say, oh, well, we can't just do the firings. But folks, you have to. Marcus, I'll let you have about 30 seconds to respond to that.
Okay, that just absolutely proves my point. And what I'm saying is that there's a lot of people in the administration which are going to say, you know, Trump's going to be out of office in 4 years, and we're going to have that same, these people come after us again, we can't do anything. So what I would ask from you is that you, when you go to these press conferences, you ask when President Trump is going to fire Bondi, because that is a big problem that we have.
Yeah, I don't think it's even on his radar to fire her right now, honestly. He keeps saying that he likes the job that she's doing. And do you like Marcus? Sorry, we have 10 seconds now.
Okay, just one last thing. Can you look into not repeating yourself? I mean, I know that it's like an exclamation point that you put on things, but...
I will do what I want to do, Marcus. Thanks for calling in, Marcus. We appreciate your time. All right, folks, don't go anywhere. We got more to discuss in the third hour of the program. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said, this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here. A year after the Onion said they bought us,
We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Oh, 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 oh.